Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, actress Lisa Arendelle is in the studio to discuss her new role on the Bounce TV original series, Saints and Sinners. She also talks exclusively to us about appearing in HBO's The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks and a moment on set that nearly brought her to tears. Acclaimed singer-songwriter Gordon Chambers gives us the 411 on his new album Surrender. The Grammy-winning music star also opens up about an encounter he had with Whitney Houston that changed his life. Closing out the show is PR and marketing maven Saptosa Foster. She stopped by the Upfront Studios to discuss her new role with the Black Women Film Network and why black media matters. But first, here's this week's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Casting TaylorMade is looking for men with tactical experience for the show Manifesto. The men must have old-school haircuts and need to be available on Tuesday, April 4th and Wednesday, April 5th. If this is you, please submit a current photo along with your name, phone number, email address, height, weight, and city to extracastingt-m@gmail.com with SWAT45 in the subject line of the email. Extra Casting Atlanta is looking for an attractive male and female who appear in their mid-20s to mid-30s for a very small dinner party scene with the cast of Halt and Catch Fire. The actors would need to be available on Tuesday, April 4th. If this is you, please submit two recent photos and your contact information to hcfextras4@gmail.com with dinner party in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, the Oprah Winfrey Network, OWN, is adding two new original docuseries to its Saturday evening lineup. The first show, Checking In, catches up with former Essence editor-in-chief Monique Greenwood, who left the media conglomerate in 2001 to open up the Aquaba Bed and Breakfast Inns. The hugely successful entrepreneur runs her empire with heart and soul while serving as the everything planner and innkeeper. She also finds herself as the therapist to many of her guests who bring more baggage than luggage. The second show, Released, is being described as first narratives of formerly incarcerated men and women as they walk out of prison doors for the first time to restart their lives. These brave individuals will attempt to reconnect with their loved ones, establish their independence, and begin the long, hard work of resurrecting their abandoned lives. Look for those two shows to debut later on this year. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Destroy doing what I can, cause you see I be a b-boy, taking it to the future. I execute you if I have to. You can stand still like a statue, wondering what's going on, like Marvin. I start to carve in my own spot. A man royal make me hot, but we say cold in the go. The brother common sense never stop with a flow.
Hey Upfront listeners, this is Ray Cornelius urging you to pick up your phones and dial 404-880-8807 to make your pledge of support for this show and the countless others that you listen to throughout the week. That's 404-880-8807 or make your pledge of support online at WCLK.com. My first guest is best known for her role as the lovable and God-fearing Vanessa in Tyler Perry's hit movie, Madea's Family Reunion. I'm talking about none other than Lisa Arendelle. For decades now, the former dancer turned actress has portrayed wholesome, girl-next-door characters in projects for television and film. But now the actress has stepped out of her comfort zone and is playing more sinister characters like attorney Rebecca Jordan on Bounce TV's original series, Saints and Sinners. It's a role that Arendelle says she's enjoyed playing alongside the show star Vanessa Bell Calloway.
So I'm playing Rebecca Jordan, hashtag Rebecca Jordan, and she looks like the Lisa Arendelle that you're used to, right? Like bright and shiny is what I've been hearing when I read my my Instagram page or Twitter. Oh wow, we didn't know you could be evil. So yes, I am playing this diabolical attorney. She is the prosecuting attorney for the county. And I am Vanessa Bell Calloway's arch enemy.
Yeah.
And that is just so much fun. Vanessa is so talented, very passionate. I think what I love most about working with her so far is that she's extremely serious about her work, but she does not take herself too seriously. So she laughs at herself. She laughs at us. Like, she has a great time. And for me, that is refreshing.
Yeah.
I love to see somebody that does the preparation, but then also, I guess because she's so prepared, she lets go and she just has a great time. And it's really encouraging for me. And I'm learning. You know, she's beautiful.
Arendelle is also appearing in this month's HBO original film, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, featuring Oprah Winfrey and Renee Elise Goldsberry. Lacks was an African-American woman who died of cervical cancer in 1951 and whose body was used for medical exploration without her family's consent. Arendelle plays the cruel and wicked Aunt Ethel in the film and talked exclusively to Upfront about how she remained in character the entire time she was on set. It was difficult for her, considering her co-stars for the scene were children actors.
I am evil Aunt Ethel. I live in the memory of the character that Oprah plays. When Henrietta Lacks passed away at the very young age, in her 30s, a cousin, you know, one of the many cousins, came to live in Henrietta's home with Henrietta's husband and her three children. She had a fourth child also, but the fourth child, the first child was in a mental institution.
Okay.
My character, Aunt Ethel, moves in, and I have a chapter in the book. I'm so grateful that George C. Wolfe, our amazing director, and he has also worked on the screenplay. It is his screenplay, ultimately, I think.
Okay.
His writing, ultimately. But he actually kept her in the story. And so I'm very grateful for that because I have the opportunity to be there. I have no words. So I am a very dark memory in Oprah's mind. And you see how my character kept food from them, how she transformed their home that was full of light and love into, you know, a very dark place where there was physical abuse, where there was sexual abuse. And I play with these beautiful children, and I don't know, actors will understand what I mean, but the fascinating and different and exciting part of playing this character for me was to know that most of the interaction, almost all of my interaction on screen in this film, happens to be with the three children.
Okay.
As an actress, I understood that generally children are not acting, that they are cast because of their personalities, because who they actually are. And does that line up with what has been written on the page for the character? So so I thank God. I feel very grateful to God that he illuminated this for me before I got to set, that it would be important that the children believed that I was evil. Because if Lisa showed up, then we would just be nice would have fun. Yeah. And like, I love kids.
And there'd be a different outcome.
And they would not be able to act that I was evil Aunt Ethel. So what was interesting for me is that the acting for me started as soon as the children were on the transportation vehicle with me to set.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So I would actually not let them. I had my costume on. We had a fantastic costume designer. Artists. I love them. So I would get on the van with, you know, they would transport myself with the children in the van to the set. I didn't look at them. I didn't address them. I would address their parents. I tried not to smile, because I didn't want them to see Lisa. This culminated in like a day where we had to do something really awful. Really awful. And the little girl who had, you know, she was like, oh, she's, you know, she's okay. You know, nothing warm. I'm used to kids jumping on me. But, you know, but I was keeping it clear. Like, you know, I did say, listen, we're going to be serious in this rehearsal here, which I never do. But when I did that, the kids were like, my kids were 5 and 6 and maybe 8. So the kids are like looking at me all mean and, you know, like scared. And I'm just thinking in my mind, good. I'm real sorry, but good. We had a scene where I had to abuse one of the children. And Oprah's character is watching, the little girl, when Oprah's character is little, she's watching. And this little girl saw me. And before my director said action, because I told you my character has no words, I can only communicate with
facial expression.
Yes. Right. Before your director says action, you can live in the moment before. And I used that this time to speak to the child that I was beating. So the children watching me beat their older brother got to hear my voice. And I was saying, of course, abusive things that caregivers can say when they are hurting children, right? Manipulative things, hurtful things. And by the time they said, when he said action, I stopped talking and I just kept the physical going. And they said, cut. And I just heard the little girl go, like she just was bawling. I actually had to leave the room. I had to leave the room just because when you are physically pretending to hurt someone, that's sort of not really acting either. It is acting, but you physiologically begin to create adrenaline and emotion that matches that. So I walked out of the room because it was a very ugly part of myself that, you know, of my character that I brought into that room, and I walked out immediately. Our assistant director came to the back to find me. I'm listening and I'm hearing my children crying and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, right? And I'm thinking, of course, I'm gonna have to do it again. Because you generally do more than the assistant director came back. Our first assistant director came back and he put his arm around me. He said, are you okay? And I said, I'm okay. Are they okay? And he said, we got it. We're done. They got the, yeah, they're going to be fine. I said, really, we're done? And he said, yeah, we're done. We got it. Mm. And I ran out the little room in the back and I went to the kids and I scooped them up and I was like, I love you. I love you. I was just pretending. I was just pretending. Yeah. I was just playing. Miss Lisa was just playing. It was just so awful, yeah, you know, to do that. But the children take it very seriously. And of course, because children, all children, all, are so resilient and loving and forgiving, right?
Right.
All they want to do is, really? It's okay now? You were just pretending? And I'm getting big hugs and love, and their moms come up, and you okay? And, you know, it was just, we needed a momentary healing for the kids because it was just like I traumatized these children,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So Ray, that's you're the first person to hear that story.
Wow.
But it was rich and exciting. George C. Wolfe, my dream has always been to work on stage with him. And so to be able to work on film with him, and there is a feeling that an actor gets. You know, we do lots of projects, but there are certain projects that you do where you're in the midst of it and you know it's special.
Thank you, Lisa, for sharing that exclusive story. Look for her on Sunday evenings in Bounce TV's Saints and Sinners and in HBO's The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks on April 22nd.
Time, I've been passing time watching trains go by.
all of my life. Lying on the sand, watching seabirds fly. And wishing there would be someone waiting there for me. Something's telling me it might be.
Hey, this is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
That was the voice of Grammy-winning singer-songwriter Gordon Chambers performing his version of the Stephen Bishop classic, It Might Be You. The song is one of 12 from his current album, Surrender, which was released at the top of the year. The very personal project is Chambers' first album in 5 years and features the soul-stirring I Made It with Eric Roberson and Steph Reed, as well as Back to Love with the incomparable Layla Hathaway. Up Front caught up with Chambers this week to dish about the songs, which soul music vocalist Ledisi calls his new musical diary. So Gordon, you actually remade one of my favorite songs, It Might Be You. And it was so funny because when I was listening to the CD and that song came up, I immediately thought of the Whitney Houston Waiting to Exhale film where all of the characters are in the car and it's at the end of the movie. And I was like, oh my God. So, and then you've got the song that's a tribute to her, but called My Way. There's this huge connection here, but let's talk about It Might Be You.
It Might Be You is one of my favorite songs of all time. It was released in the 80s, and that was my teenage years when I really got serious about songwriting. And that was a time when I was studying song craft, and I meant all kinds of songs, from pop songs to, you know, contemporary gospel songs to the Hawkins, the Winans, and then people like Jackson's catalog, like Prince's catalog. But there was also amazing pop music, like songs like Cyndi Lauper's Time to Time and Toto's Africa. And It Might Be You was one of those songs that I dearly loved. And it's melancholy, but it's hopeful at the same time. And it, to me, it's like a song that gives a shout out to single people that are still looking for love, like myself. And love can happen in an instant. And it's kind of indirectly a tribute to Luther, because Luther would always take these pop songs that, you know, and, you know, often just rework them and jazz them and R&B them in his own way and make a sort of a, what he hoped would be a new classic of them. So that was kind of my Lutherization of another song, and hoping to, that it would reconnect with another generation.
Yeah. Now, you also, since we're talking about love, you also did a duet with Layla Hathaway called Back to Love. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes, Back to Love with the amazing Layla Hathaway. I've known her since college. She went to Berklee School of Music. I went to Brown University. So we've been buddies. We hung out in Boston often. And when she got out of college, I wrote an article about her for Essence. And I've been asking her to record with me for 4 albums. So finally, I guess the timing was right. And I sent her 2 songs. I sent her Imaginary Lover, which ended up being a duet with Carol Riddick. And I sent her Back to Love. And she chose Back to Love, which was the more up-tempo of the two. And she's a consummate professional in the studio. She was easy to work with. I mean, I'm in awe of that woman's voice and tone to it. And she was completely humble and just wonderful and just easy breezy to work with and very professional and came right on time. She left right on time. But she was a team player in every way. And recording with her was a dream come true, because I grew up listening to, of course, her father's catalog, but of course being very moved by the great duets, the Donny Ann Hathaway and Roberta Flack duets, as well as the Ashford and Simpson duet. The song itself is a call for healing. It's not necessarily about romantic love. It's just love of, it could be friends, it could be family, it could be, you know, lovers, spouses that have gotten into a fight. And instead of just doing the harder work of sitting down, talking about the issues, apologizing and hearing each other and starting fresh and anew, what they're doing is what we've become so good at, is holding grudges. Blaming, getting caught up in our ego and wanting revenge, as opposed to doing the harder work of healing. And I found myself in my late 40s, here I am, with friends that I thought I'd be lifetime friends with in terrible battles where we've ended friendships and without really talking about it. And I think without, you know, just, and so this song became very personal. But like Surrender, this is an album of diary. And this time I had to tell the truth. And I hope it bless people and inspire people to just learn how to talk better.
And I've made a few mistakes. I've learned my hard lessons. My heart had to break. But every day there were blessings. Somehow I'm still here. Proud that I can say that I made it through. Tears, and I did it all my way.
Now, you have a song that is a tribute to Whitney titled My Way. What was your biggest lesson that you learned working with her and having her as a very good friend?
Well, Miss Whitney Houston, she was full of life, baby. You know, she walked into a room full diva, full presence, you know, but full of warmth, full of grace. And just, you know, very vivid person, you know, she smiled wide and she laughed loud and she sang all the time. She loved to sing. She would just sing along with whatever was happening, you know? And she was very present and very warm and real. You know, when she held your hand, she held them. She had a very firm handshake. And I remember once she even prayed with me, and when she prayed, I felt that, you know, anointing hands. I think that she was true in every way. She expressed her truth. There was nothing fake or phony about her, but very, very inspirational. You know, it was when I was recording with her in Atlanta on songs for Just Whitney and the Christmas album One Wish that she changed my life, because as a producer and a writer in the studio with artists, you have to often sing to them, you know, the way you want the melody to go. And so I was singing her the way the melody that I needed her to sing for the bridge of one of the songs. And I was very insistent because time was ticking and I knew I needed a certain kind of climax. And so I sang it kind of loud and kind of authoritatively. She walked right up in my face, very up in my eye. And I was like, oh, Lord, have I, you know, like offended, you know, the greatest, you know.
The voice.
Century, the voice. Have I offended her? And, you know, she's from Newark. I'm like, ooh, this could be a fight. I don't know. But she walked right up in my face. She said, I think you want to do what I do, baby. And if that's what you need to do, then that's what you need to do. It was one sentence like that, like one run-on sentence. And she said, I said, what did you say? She said, you know what I'm talking about. I think you want to do what I do. And if that's what you need to do, then that's what you need to do. I said, do you mean sing? She said, you know what I'm talking about. Now, what's that note again? And then she went back into the studio, and she did give me the beautiful note that I needed. But she also was speaking to my heart. I think she knew in that moment that I wanted to cross over and from being writer producer, that I wanted to, she could feel in my heart that I wanted to sing as well. And that's when I went very shortly after that. That was the inspiration I needed to get over my own insecurity and, you know, whatever was it going on inside of myself. And that's when I started working on introducing Gordon Chambers, my first solo album, which you guys played and really supported. You guys have always supported me at COK. And that was the thing that I needed. So Whitney's lesson and legacy for me is that I started a vocal coaching business, but I really think of it as a vocal coaching ministry. And I've coached over the last 5 years people from recording artists on Motown and Universal to artists from Japan or Indonesia that fly all the way to America to work with me, to beginners, people who want to sing just as a hobby, you know, recording artists, independent artists, earning artists, children. But I try to coach them from a spiritual place and give them that inspiration that Whitney gave me when she helped me find that voice, the voice inside myself. And so her legacy lives in the people who I coach most. Because I remember that moment when I got those goosebumps and I knew that I had not just, that I was ready, you know, and I try to do that with my students especially.
Gordon Chambers' Surrender is available at gordonchambers.com.
Good morning, honey, you old gloomy sight. Good morning, heartache. Thought we said goodbye last night. I tossed and turned until it seemed you had gone. But here you are with the dawn.
Hey, Upfront listeners, this is Ray Cornelius urging you to pick up your phones and dial 404-880-8807 to make your pledge of support for this show and the countless others that you listen to throughout the week. That's 404-880-8807, or make your pledge of support online at WCLK.com. My last guest is an Atlanta media maven whose magic takes place behind the scenes. I'm talking about Saptosa Foster, managing partner for the 135th Street Agency. The strategic communications and experimental marketing firm specializes in campaigns targeting multicultural youth consumers and businesses and was founded by Shante Bacon in 2005. Since that time, 135th Street has served as one of the entertainment industry's top firms, representing such icons as Spike Lee and Jermaine Dupri. The firm also works with the Oprah Winfrey Network, OWN, and has played a huge part in the success of their original shows, like The Haves and The Have-Nots, reaching Atlanta audiences and beyond.
So working with OWN is one of our signature pride and joys when we think about our company, because our relationship with OWN started in 2012. They have been an extremely loyal company. We've worked with them for ever since 2012. And you know, in this industry, especially as a boutique firm, it can be very difficult to hold on clients for that long. And so we have taken great pride in seeing OWN evolve and in bringing that content to African-American press. And I say this all the time at our press events. The fact that we can host press lunches in Atlanta or in other markets for media that don't get invites from networks or studios to come and engage directly with talent, that we're very proud of that. And then also with OWN, they have really found their groove when it comes to their viewers, and they're producing fantastic content, and the best is yet to come. We started in 2013, I believe, is when we launched the Tyler Perry programming, when he first had his deal with OWN. And, you know, of course, that was The Haves and Have-Nots, Love Thy Neighbor. And then several different programs, you know, came
Loving
from
you
that.
Is wrong. Yeah.
If Loving You Is Wrong, of course, For Better or Worse, and all of that. Those campaigns were a lot of work.
Yeah.
They weren't a home run. People think, oh, you got this person. Oh, it's Tyler Perry. Everybody loves Tyler Perry. But there actually was a lot of strategy and trial and error at times on our part to make sure that we were hitting the mark press-wise. And we are very proud to say that The Haves and Have-Nots is one of OWN's top-rated shows, and we had a part to play in that. So definitely working on Greenleaf, Queen Sugar, If Loving You Is Wrong, these programs are successful, rating successes for OWN. And, you know, they're also featuring, if not all Black casts, they have Black producers, writers. So even behind the scenes on those productions, we're proud to promote, you know, this type of content that is diverse, and that is exactly what television needs.
In addition to the 135th Street Agency, Foster also works with the Black Women Film Network. It's a cause that is near and dear to her heart as an African-American woman and entrepreneur.
I am the new chair of the Black Women Film Network, and it's an organization started 20 years ago by Cheryl Gripper, who was a community relations professional at 11 Alive for many years. She was very well known in the community, and she had a passion for film. And she created this organization solely to preserve the voice of women of color in film. If we don't advocate for ourselves and create a space for us to network and learn and exchange information, no one will. 20 years ago, that just didn't exist. In our 20th anniversary, which we celebrated earlier this month at our luncheon, Untold Stories luncheon, where we brought Dondre Whitfield and Sally Richardson Whitfield and Tiana Paris, and we honored Tashina Arnold. And we want to highlight folks who do have a story, who have trailblazed a path for other people of color. But we also want to sow into the future. So we give scholarships to 3 or 4 students, college students every year. And it's just a real joy to work with, because that's sort of the opportunity I get to put my money where my mouth is. Like, this is not something, I'm not being paid for it. And yeah. The only benefit I get from it is seeing that I'm not just asking for people's money. I'm not asking, you know, when you're promoting films and TV shows, you're asking for something. Please come, you know, see this film or tune into this show. With the Black Women Film Network, I'm saying, hey, here is free information, an opportunity to network and to gain resources. So this is something that, you know, our city needs, especially as the film industry continues to evolve. We need to preserve a space for women of color. So we're looking forward to another strong year of programming. There's going to be some changes that we're going to that are on the horizon. And I just would love for people to kind of keep an eye on us. BlackWomenFilm.org.
Yeah. Foster also issued a call to action for more Black businesses to collaborate and explained why Black media matters now more than ever before.
In 2 years, hopefully we have evolved as a business and can sort of expand into a more significant way into other markets. We do have a national field team. We roll out national campaigns for folks like Fox. We're working right now with National Geographic on an amazing documentary called LA 92. Of course, we work with OWN, WeTV, So Def, who's going on tour, and we work with Google on their diversity and inclusion initiatives. But we as a business, and you know, this has been on my mind all day, and my team, you know, knows that I like to talk about this, especially in these severe social political times. But now more than ever, we as entrepreneurs, Black entrepreneurs, we have got to continue to invest in each other and support each other. I know that's very cliche at this point because we've been saying that, our parents been saying that, our grandparents been saying that. But look at what we're surrounded by. And the fact that our business has survived and we've thrived for 12 years is about the fact that we invest in other Black businesses. We have a great partnership. Shantae and I work very well together. It is a myth that Black women can't get along. We get along very well. And we also keep a low overhead. We're not out here stunting on social media, trying to ball and try to act like we are something that we're not.
Right.
And we have to give our best as entrepreneurs to other entrepreneurs, meaning the time and energy that we spend taking our strengths and geniuses outside of the community, to me, is a travesty. I remember Tyler Perry at some years ago. I'm sorry for getting off script. I just have to say this.
Okay.
Tyler Perry years ago did a presentation in at Woodruff Arts Center for, it was actually a White House initiative for African-American businesses. And I will never forget what he said, simply that everything we need as a people is right here in our community. You know, he has his studio, built his studio down there on Fort McPherson in my neighborhood. I live in the West End. Shout out to the West End. And he built that huge studio with sound stages down here at Fort McPherson. He employs over 400 employees, and most of them are African-American or people of color. I mean, this is, and you know, he doesn't go and ask and seek out. He keeps all of that genius, that talent, that professionalism, that expertise. He keeps it in the community. And that is very important, especially with these young graduates who are, you know, we're graduating, AUC graduates all these geniuses every year. And it is hurtful to our people for them to take those talents and keep them outside of the community. So in terms of where 135th wants to be in 2 years, of course, we want to be more competitive. We want to be able to hire more talent. We want to reach more markets, but we're not going to be able to do that alone. We need the support of the Ray Corneliuses who come to our events, and you shoot our events, and then you post it, and you're timely and professional, and your editorial is clear. And then we can go back to our clients and say, Black media matters because we have consistent, reliable press like Ray Cornelius. Everybody plays a part. We can't get there if we only prioritize mainstream media, or we only prioritize the voices that are not in our community. So that's, you know, kind of our 2-year plan. This is our 5-year plan. We want to expand and become, you know, everything that I feel like we have the potential to become.
Thank you, Saptosa, for stopping by, and congrats once again on becoming the new chair for the Black Women Film Network. Thank you so much for listening to today's show. I'd really like to thank my guests, Lisa Arendelle, Gordon Chambers, and Saptosa Foster. I would also like to thank my engineer, Mark Angel, and you. Please join us next Saturday, April 8th at 9 a.m. for another exciting edition of Upfront. You can also keep up with me during the week at raycornelius.com and on Facebook and Instagram under Ray Cornelius. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.